Blog Talk Radio.
On July 1st of this year, the interest rates on Stafford student loans, the same loans that many of you used to help pay for college, are set to double. And that means some hardworking students will be paying about $1,000 extra just to get their education. So I've called on Congress to prevent this from happening. What we've said is simple. Now is not the time to make school more expensive for our young people.
Oh, yeah. You should listen to the president. Or as I like to call him, the Preezy of the United Steezy. Things were heating up inside Congress's chambers behind all those closed doors. So the president made a few discreet calls across the aisle. He said, hey, let's get together on this one. Without an affordable Stafford loan, where can a student turn? The Pell Grant is a beautiful thing, but with college getting more expensive, is it enough by itself to satisfy all your collegiate needs? Oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no. If Congress doesn't act, it's the students who play. The right and left should join on this like Kim and Kanye.
Now, there's some in Congress who disagree. They say keeping the interest rate low isn't the way to help our students. They say we should be doing everything we can to pay down the national debt. Well, so long as it doesn't include taxing billionaires. But their position is that students just have to make this rate increase work. Frankly, I don't buy it.
The Barackness monster ain't buying it. We all know our legislative body is in the House tossing and turning late into the night. But still, Republicans disagree and could even filibuster. But if they do, the president says they're going to feel it, Buster.
The GOP is steady saying no, no, no. They should start something new to do like Tim Tebow.
The reason it's so important to keep down costs is so we keep college affordable.
And the president knows his stuff, y'all. That's why they call him the POTUS, which means person on top. What is it?
Jimmy, POTUS stands for President of the United States.
He's the POTUS with the most
Let's keep the rates down on college loans.
Stop the loan you say may be your own.
Yeah. Let's get it together and make our lives better. Cause the college degree is more than a few letters. If college don't rise, we'll have financial blues.
And that is how we slow jam the news.
Oh, yeah.
Give it up for President Barack Obama. Oh, more with the president when we get back. Come on back.
Okay, it is May the 11th, and it's 3 minutes after the hour. Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the last word in everything. We had some outrageous stuff that happened yesterday in North Carolina. They keep saying, well, this amendment, voting for the bill, is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I don't think so. I think when all the papers are shuffled, you'll find that we had fewer than 14, maybe 11, maybe 10% that actually turned out. And that's supposed to be 61%, remember? They said it went by 61%, but only 10% voted. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with you people out there. You know, this reminds me of the same people that say, you know what? That hurricane is coming, but you know, I don't need to listen because it ain't going to happen to me. Yeah, well, the hurricane is here already. Now I have talked to at least three or four people today that said, I didn't know. I did not know. And I said, well, what did you know? What didn't you know? They have no idea what they didn't know because they didn't care to listen when the time to listen had come, and now it's gone. It's gone. The time to listen has come and gone, and the people did not care enough to find out. You're going to find out, all right. Let's see who we got on the line right away. Hello, who's this?
Hi, hello, Michael.
It's
how are
Grace.
You?
It's Friday. It must be Grace's Corner.
Yeah. Well, Grace is calling from Las Vegas Airport.
Don't they have slot machines at the airport?
I'm at the Las Vegas airport, buddy. I just landed about, you know, a little while ago.
Well, you see,
and
I planned my
flight so that I could land in time to call you.
I mean, that's amazing. How did you arrange it like that?
It took a lot of doing, I'll tell you. But I did it. You know, Mike, I do pretty much anything for you.
Boy, you are amazing.
You know?
You are amazing.
How
and
are
how's
you?
The baby? I am, hey, listen, I've been up all night because I had changed browsers because my Explorer is down. I was up all night trying to figure out what the heck was going on and couldn't find out it's the Explorer because it worked in some cases. But, like, I couldn't do any online banking, so I thought it was online banking. But then I couldn't get into the studio, and the guy suggested when I went on the help page, that change browsers, and I did, and it came up. So,
amazing.
In an Explorer. I'm on Firefox now.
Okay, well, there you go. You just got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. How is the baby?
The baby is fine. He's not with me because he does not like Las Vegas. It's too much concrete. You know, he has to have his grass to pee. He's got to have his grass to lift his leg, you know.
And how does the baby, what does the baby think of Joe?
The baby loves Joe. When he sees Joe, his tail just goes a mile a minute. And he doesn't know how to stop. He just completely loves him. Really
now,
does.
See,
now you know why I'm in Vegas, right? You do know why I'm in Vegas.
Tell us why you are in Vegas.
Oh, actually, you know, it's a double whammy. We originally had planned this months ago. We were going to come here because it was a friend's birthday party, and so we said, okay, we'll come. But then we, you know, about 5 days or so ago, Joe and I looked at each other as we were making our wedding invitation list. We hit like 600, and we were nowhere near the end. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I said, you know, with friends like Michael Lawson, they're going to drink us dry. And
you're the one that announced it on my show. I didn't do that.
Well, but... So we decided to elope. We're getting married on Sunday, which is Mother's Day.
Elope.
Yes, we're eloping. We're going to get married this Sunday, the day after tomorrow, which is Mother's Day. And so I owe you a drink.
Owe me? Are you kidding me? I bought a brand new outfit. I was going to come there and take the baby out on a stroll. You see?
Yeah, I know. I, okay, Michael. But so when I get back to North Carolina, I will be Mrs. Joseph Galloway. How about
now,
that?
Now, when am I going to meet Joe? Because I've only seen Joe, pictures of
her. Honey, you're going to come to that the Veterans thing? When you come to the Veterans thing at Welcome Home Vets up in Mooresville, you get to meet
that
Welcome Home Veterans, the grand opening of the Living Museum is going to be May 17th, 18th, and 19th. And 17th is the grand opening itself.
Where?
But, up in Mooresville. It's on North Main Street. I think it's 162. The old site
you need
is 128.
You need to
Pardon
send
me?
Out something. You need to send out
I already
something
did. I already did, dude. I already did. Yeah, I did. It is.
Okay.
Yeah. But we'll send it out again for people like you who can't find the bag and write browser to use.
Hey, please, give me a break here. So you're going down there. You went to Vegas, and now it's a double whammy. And
it's a double whammy. I'm in Vegas. I'm at the airport right now. I'm just sitting here waiting for baggage and all that kind of nonsense. So yeah, we'll call Michael and see what kind of trouble we can get into.
Well, what is your latest trouble? I know you have something brewing.
Well, the latest piece of information has to do with North Carolina. Well, you know that we have an emergency meeting of the State Executive Committee this tomorrow.
Yeah, what a joke that is. So give me a break.
Right. And it was a bad, I feel, this is all personal now. Okay, personally, I feel it's bad timing because it's Mother's Day, it's graduation day, it's prom day. I mean, you name it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure how many people can go, and the people that can and are going, they have to really rearrange their schedules. I was not willing to rearrange my schedule. You know, I'm sorry.
If I rearrange my schedule, I'd have to move out and move in with the baby because my wife would have definitely put me out.
Yeah, well, me too. I mean, if I had rearranged my schedule, I wouldn't be engaged anymore, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Not a good idea. So we're having this meeting tomorrow, and at this meeting tomorrow, the objective really is to elect a new chair of the Cabarrus County of the North Carolina Democratic Party, a new chair. The thing, however, now is that there. Movement that is afoot, and it's that's fine. I mean, you understand if you want to keep David Parker as the chair, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. The problem that I do have is the way it's being done. Can you hear me, Michael?
I hear you.
Okay, you're there.
Yep.
So my problem is the way it's being done. You know, I feel if you want to keep somebody, if you want to support someone, support that person on their merits. Support that person because, hey, he did X, Y, Z. He is A, B, C, D, E. All right? But the way it's going about, it's being done, they're disparaging the Council of State. They're disparaging Elaine Marshall. They're disparaging Governor Perdue. And there's this conspiracy theory that is being touted whereby the Council of State has it in for David Parker. I just don't think, you know, first of all, there are no legs to it. And I don't think that that's the right way to go about it. Now, in everybody's defense, it's not a conspiracy theory that has, like I said, doesn't have legs.
Who was the guy that sent out the letter? But some nut job sent out this letter.
What are you talking about?
Some nut job sent out a letter and stated that Elaine Marshall was behind the whole thing. I don't know who this guy is. He's supposed to be an SEC member. I don't know him. And as a matter of fact, I gave David Parker a call at his house, spoke to his wife, and asked him to come on the show today. I have not heard back from him, but we got another hour and 45 minutes, so let's see if he calls in.
Yeah.
So, when you start disparaging someone like the Secretary of State, I have no use for you.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. The thing is, disparaging and maligning the Council of State. These are the very people, the people were the members of the Council of State. Delay Marshall, Walter Dalton, Janet Cowell, Beth Wood. All these guys are running for election in November. If Democrats start disparaging the Council of State now, that gives so much fuel to the other side where they can say, your people don't even trust you.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
And that is wrong. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That is wrong. David Parker has merits. He's got qualities. If he endorsed him based upon these qualities, but please, for God's sake, don't endorse him by tearing down other people. That's just a wrong thing to do.
I'm trying to think. There was something that was said. Don't tell me you want to resign and then don't resign. If you don't want to resign, don't make that statement.
I think
there is a major problem here, because people like myself, I've spoke to at least 30 or 40 people who will not be there because they made arrangements for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
In the African American community, this is a major, major holiday.
It's a big day, yes.
And even in other communities, it's a major holiday. But the people are going all over the country.
Yeah.
When he said he was going to resign, he should have resigned that day, that hour. I mean, when we had a first vice chair, could have filled in until the SEC meeting. And they could have elected someone. It would have been a smooth transition. But no. So, no matter what the merits David Parker has, don't say something that you don't want to do. Because it looks like he doesn't want to do it and just said it to get heat off his back. Now, I don't know how true that is. It may not be true at all.
Well, I always tell people this whole thing. I mean, how this, if it looks like a duck, talks like a duck, walks like a duck. Well, what I say
it's
to people
elephant.
Is if it looks like a, if it is not an, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and talks like a duck, it ain't a fish. You can be guaranteed it ain't a fish. It ain't a dog. It ain't a cat.
That's true.
Because I've been accused of not being anti David Parker because I endorsed Bill Fazen for the chair. Well, I endorsed Bill Fazen. Okay. Well, Bill lost. David won. He's the chair. So we came together. All of us, all Democrats, came together, and we support David Parker. But we've got to remember also that this is not about any one individual. It is not about David Parker. It's not about himself. It is about the whole entire we have to look at the whole picture, the whole entire picture. And the whole entire picture is that if we're going to keep North Carolina blue, if we're going to elect a Democratic governor, if we're going to keep the Secretary of State, if we're going to take back Raleigh, we need to take back Raleigh, okay? Because the Republicans are doing horrible, horrible things to our state. We have to take back Raleigh. We've got to keep the Senate in D.C., and we've got to take back the House of Representatives. In order to do that, we have to not have distractions. Unfortunately, this is a huge distraction. And David were to stay as the chair, this will not go away. Some people
seem to think
that, if we just have him stay, it'll go away. It will not go away because the Republicans are not going to let it go away.
Absolutely. And if I was in their shoes, I would not let it go away either.
Yeah. So
the thing is that I was just looking, the headline at 2:00 on the news was President Obama, but staffers saying that other people in the party saying that if If it wasn't a done deal in Charlotte, the president would never have allowed North Carolina to have the convention.
Really?
Because of
it. Jim in Vegas, I didn't see that. Yeah, because of it.
That's what they're saying now. They said it's such a distraction. But he is moving ahead to make sure that he can grab everything out of this. And he also, with this Amendment 1 bill that passed, they keep making a major thing of this. This is not a major thing. And it could be overturned in the courts. That's the first thing. The second thing is, we didn't have more than 12% vote of the entire population of the state. So if it got 61%, it got 61% of 12%.
Yeah. Isn't that sad?
So what are we talking about here? This is nothing.
This is
so
pathetic.
It passed 61%, but that's 61% of 12% of the entire state.
Yeah. That we are asking for, I think we as Democrats, we as members of the SEC, we as people who are different chairs. Now, there are some chairs who have said that if David resigns, they will not accept his resignation. There are some that have said that you've got the two factions. And here's my problem with this. We are spending, and we have spent so much time. The primary is over. Okay, we have our candidates. And yet we have spent the last few days, instead of working to support and to push our candidates, we have spent the last few days arguing back and forth whether David Parker should, whether we should keep him or whether we should send him packing. This is a distraction. It is a huge distraction. I'm very disappointed because I thought, I will say this to David's face. I like the man, but I really truly think that I really wish he would just step down for the good of North Carolina.
Absolutely.
Just say, okay, look, let's get this over with. It's done. Regardless of what it's just a distraction, David. Go away. Make it go away.
Well, in your opinion, what is needed to bring this party together where it should be for the final push?
Well, first of all, this pro and the con, the pro and con faction, that has created a huge rift already in the party, because you've got people who are very strong caucus supporters, and then you've got people that go, no, it's not that we're against him, but we really have to get rid of this distraction. So you've got the pro and con movement, and right there you've got a rift in the party, which is sad. What we need is somebody to step up to the plate, we have a few people that have stepped up to the plate, to run for the chair, but we need someone that's going to be very, very strong and be able to be very cohesive and to bring us all together, truly bring us all together. I know Don Vaughn is not the guy. This man is 30 years with Alex.
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely no. No, 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 and no, no, no. Again, this man is nothing but a Dino. He's a Democrat in name only. We don't want him. We don't want him. Okay,
we
I don't care that he's elected.
We have enough of them in the party.
We don't, but we absolutely don't need him, and we don't need Don Vaughn. Likeable guy, nice guy, but we don't need him. We have two other candidates that are good. Marianne Baldwin is very, very good. I mean, I really enjoy... she's a strong woman. Now, I'm a Democratic woman. Let me tell you what. From what I know of Marianne Baldwin, is that she's strong. She's a no-nonsense, take-no-prisoners kind of a person. I love it. I love it. Because nobody's going to run anything past her. You understand? And nobody's going to step out of line. If you try stepping out of line with your mom, Michael Lawson. You ever tried doing that? What's your mama do?
No.
Smack you upside your head?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did it once.
You got it. You get the picture. Marianne Baldwin has that same attitude. Not that she's everybody's mama, but she's tough. And we need tough. Right now we need tough. We need somebody that's not going to be messing around with any kind of nonsense. We need tough. Now, Frank Eaton's another fella, and he's a nice guy too. And he's a YD, he's a young Dem. I like him. I like Frank. only concern that I would have with Frank is not his age. I don't know how, I don't know if he's going to be strong enough. That's the only thing I have. You know, I don't know if people will run over him. I don't know. I mean, that's an if. I don't know. But let me phrase it this way. Marianne would be my first choice and Frank would be my second. Both of them are equally good. Both of them are good. So if you ask me, how I'm going to vote, I'm going to tell you right now, Marianne.
Well, there is a now. I got a I got an email today that the first vice chair, Glenn Wilkins, has not thrown a hat in the ring, but she said that if she's nominated, she would run.
Yes, and that is true. If she's nominated, she will run. So now we've got three excellent candidates.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the thing is that,
I don't know. She hasn't thrown a hat in the ring, so I can't say whether I support her or not.
Right.
Okay.
What is the main ingredient that is needed in the chair to have this party function like it should? In your opinion,
we need somebody. The last time we had a woman that headed the North Carolina Democratic Party, that woman, the party. I mean, literally, you talk about stepping up, sitting to attention. The party functioned like a well-oiled machine. Okay. Women have a tendency to be able to multitask and be able to run things well. Point of fact, look at our country, it's been run by men. Time for women to take over. Time for women to take over. Okay, we need somebody who is, like I said, Marianne Baldwin, take no prisoners. Any woman that it has that attitude, take no prisoners. That's what we need.
I want to tell you, my mother was the smartest person I ever knew. So I have to agree with you about a woman.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, though, one, we have, is this party as, well, we'll put that aside for a moment. I want to tie it in with this. Are they going to put in their platform something about this fiasco that took place yesterday, Amendment 1?
I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't know. I know they're not going to address it tomorrow.
Right.
I know for sure they're not addressing it tomorrow. But
and
it
what
has
about
come
the,
up. We do have resolutions that we are against Amendment 1. That has come up. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
We have resolutions that have stipulated that we are against Amendment 1. But I don't think we'll address it tomorrow. Tomorrow we have to address the issue of.
Right. Right, the issue of. But what about the abortion issue? What about the abortion issue? Is that going to be addressed?
Well, that has been addressed. Yeah, that has been addressed. And, you know, will it? It has been. I mean, all the issues that are important. Again, we have to reframe the argument. And rather than saying abortion, we have to just say a choice. It's the right to choose.
Right.
You know,
because
here's the issue. If you ask me as a Democrat if I was for abortion, I would tell you no. I am not.
Right.
Me,
well, nobody's for
I am
abortion.
Not.
Yeah, nobody's
but
for abortion.
Nobody's for abortion. But
right.
I cannot, you know, God gave me free will. God gave me the ability to make my choices, fall flat on my face if God gave me free will and the choice. How now do I say I am bigger and better than God, that I'm going to impose my will on somebody else, that I'm going to take away somebody else's freedom to choose?
Well,
I can't do that.
Talking about a health issue here, I want to know how the heck are the creators of the day after or the morning after pill, how are they, with all the money they have, how are they going to allow this to be a nationwide bill against even taking the pill, like Rick Santorum? I just can't see that even happening. They make too much money.
Oh, I can't. I cannot conceive of that happening. But again, I could not conceive of George Bush winning the presidency either. So you know, not twice. I thought. saw once, okay, we get rid of this sucker in 04, and now people don't know it. And so anything's possible.
Now, going back to that original question, do you think this assemblage tomorrow would pick a woman, or do you think this is the South, you know?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will, because I think at the end of the day, what's going to happen is that Democrats are going to come together and say, look, we enough of this dissension, enough of this he said, she said, enough of the everything, okay? And I just pray and wish that David would just come up and say, okay, look, I'm just going to step down. If drafted, I won't serve.
Well, that was my next question.
It's time to get away from this nonsense and just go on with it.
Let David say,
I didn't do anything wrong. I followed the letter of the law. I followed the letter of everything, and I did nothing wrong. But this has become a distraction, and I don't want to be the distraction. And we need to get Barack Obama reelected. We need to get, you know what I'm saying? We need to get Democrats. We need to get that law. And just step down.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but a lot of people here in Mecklenburg County are irate at David for what he has. And we won't go into that, but there was a lot of things down here that he promised that he did not do. And they are, so I don't believe he will get any votes down here. But I can't say that either, because I know that half the people aren't even going.
Just make sure they send their proxies. I'm here in Vegas, I have my proxy.
If half the people ain't going, who do you give the proxy? The other half. I understand that.
The other half, or somebody else, anybody else. It doesn't matter.
Well,
But
it's going to be somebody from your
county. No, it does. Right. Yeah, it has to be somebody from your county. It doesn't even have to be a member of the SEC. It can be anybody.
Right.
As long as he's a Democrat. No, don't send a Republican. that would be bad news.
So now you think that the choice of the three, we're hoping, and I'm hoping it's a woman too.
I am open to a woman. I think Gwen Wilkins has some tremendous leadership qualities. I think she's a very strong, very outspoken person. She has always been available and accessible. Anytime that I've needed to run something by her, she's always returned my calls. She's always returned my emails. I think she would be an awesome, awesome chair. We've got some great choices. We really do have some great choices. There is no reason to stick to,
I had a problem, which I wanted to get your input on this, because this is where I feel the party, the state party, has really fallen down on the job. I mean, I vote early vote. I don't think I have voted. I voted early vote ever since they started early vote. And I am the precinct chair of my precinct. I had Tuesday at least a dozen people call me up and say, where do they vote? I said, how long have you been living here? Oh, 20, 30 years. I said, well, the same place has been our precinct for 18 years. He said, no, it no longer is. I said, what do you mean no longer is?
No one's here.
It was a church. It was a church. Mm-hmm. But I said, well, did they have a sign outside? No, nothing is outside. The people did not know where to go. They were asking me, but I couldn't tell them because I didn't know where to go. Because I voted early vote. And we didn't get any information about where the new precinct was. And I finally had a call of the Board of Elections, which I couldn't get through because the lines are busy, 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 because evidently this was happening all across the county.
Right.
And they moved the precinct two blocks away. Okay? But the problem is that these people would say, well, this is the only time I have to vote. Every one of them told me that. And I'm not going to be able to vote now. I said, that's why you needed to vote during the early vote.
Right.
And this was just one precinct. I was up at one of the larger precincts at the university area here in Charlotte. And There was 100 people that were turned away and were told to go to another precinct. They normally have like 2,500 people voting there. They only had 500 voting.
Isn't that something?
So this was I blame that on the party. So,
well, it has been very, very confusing. But anyway, we have a lot of work to do. We do. We have a tremendous amount of work to do. We're not, we need some organizing. We need to move forward. So we need to get rid of as many distractions as possible.
Well, we need a second vice chair. We need a second vice chair. And do we have a third vice chair now?
I think we do. Yeah. Zach Hawkins is running. Zach is one of the people running for second. Zach is a young Dem. And he's a really good candidate. I like him. I don't know who else is running, but I know Zach is running. Let's see. I think T.E. Austin is running for secretary. I don't know who else is running. Wait. I think Randy Bowler, Randy Bowler. He is running for one of the seats as well. Now, I like Randy. He is really...
Name sounds
he's
familiar.
With it. He's the mayor of Pittsburgh. He's an awesome guy.
Yes.
A really awesome guy. I mean, you'd love him. You really would.
Yes.
But a good guy, hardworking, and just with the program. You know, he's one of the few men that I know that can multitask, honey.
Oh, no. Now, wait a minute.
I know.
Wait a minute. I need to talk to Joe. Put him on the line. Well, I need to speak.
I can. I'm waiting for him to land. I'm waiting for him to land. I'm sitting here because he's flying in from Texas. I just flew in from Charlotte. But anyway, I got to go. I got to go because I got to go find him.
All right.
All right. All right,
honey.
I'll talk to you soon.
We will speak to you next Friday.
Yes, indeed. All right, then.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. And that was Grace's Corner. Well, as you can see, there is a problem with the Democratic Party in North Carolina. But, like all parties, let's put it this way, as was once said by a wise man, we're not a party, we're Democrats. So, it is, as we talked about on last night's show, if anybody heard it, which we had some problems because of my browser, that I now know it was my browser. We talked about with Thomas Fortenberry, we talked about language and how the Republican Party, under the guise of or the leadership of Frank Luntz, has used language to misrepresent and distort the truth. How they have thrown words around like communists, communism, Marxists, Leninists, socialism, socialists, fascism, totalitarian, theocracy, autocracy, and David Alinsky, Saul Alinsky, as the Pillsbury Doughboy Newt Gingrich says quite often. It seems to just roll off his tongue. Saul Alinsky. For all you out there that don't know who Saul Alinsky was, Saul Alinsky was an American communicator, an organizer, and writer. And he is a person who's considered to be the father of the modern community organizing routine. He's the one that taught us, that taught how to organize communities. As Thomas Paine once said, he's the great American leader. He is one of the great American leaders of the non-socialist left. You notice the word he used, non-socialist left. Now, when we talk about words, non means not, he was not a socialist. And, of course, they've had the criticisms for four decades about, Alinsky, I should say. He received a lot of criticism and gained praise from many public figures. He was the focus on improving the living conditions of poor communities across North America in the 1950s. And began turning his attention to improving the African-American ghettos. And he began it in Chicago. You notice the connection that the Pillsbury Doughboy uses with the president and Alinsky. You notice the, yeah. Well, that's where he gets it from. And He went to help organize communities out in California and Michigan and New York City and dozens of other places that needed it. And he also went to colleges and it became part of the organizing strategies on campus. Time Magazine once said of him that American democracy is being altered by Alinsky's ideas. But listen to this. William F. Buckley, the conservative author, said that he was very close to being an organizational genius. This is high praise coming from someone who is one of the idealist fathers of conservatism. And there is a thing about, we were talking about language last night and I'm talking about it today, that I'm a liberal. I don't know what a progressive is. I'm a liberal. If a progressive is liberal, that's fine. I don't care. But there is nothing that you can say that a liberal can be condemned for. Now, there are conservatives who are true conservatives. But these nut jobs that the Regressive Party has right now are not conservatives. Conservatives don't want to roll back anything. They want to take things as they are and make sure they work before they move on. They want to move on slowly. These nut jobs, the Ryans and the other nut jobs. See, Ryan is a different category than Pillsbury Doughboy and the Rick Santorums. These are people who want to be somebody because they've been thrown out of every place they have been eventually when the people caught on to their trickery. With forked tongue, you know what I mean? Definitely forked tongue. There is a whole lot of things that Rick Santorum, and if he was the candidate instead of Rich Boy, that would have come up where he voted for democratic principles and then turned around and said, no, he didn't do it. That's why he got slaughtered when he ran for Senate in his own home state of Pennsylvania by over 18 points. That's why the Pillsbury Doughboy was thrown out. And, you know, he's thrown out. He wasn't taken physically because you'd have to use a forklift, but he wasn't taken physically and thrown out of the House. He was fined over $300,000, and he wants to spin it and say, oh, no, that was just a little something I gave them, you know, just to settle. Nobody gives away $300,000. Not even the minister when he walks around with it in his pocket. Nobody does that. But when you have a man like the Pillsbury Doughboy who's condemning the President of the United States as he goes into a daggone hospital room with the boss papers from his wife that just got an operation with his girlfriend downstairs or outside the room, whatever. How the heck can you trust this? Don't tell me anything about Bill Clinton. This man does this and then goes on the floor and condemns somebody else. That's just the same thing. What, these chicken hawks? These chicken hawks. The ones who didn't serve in the military. Who talk such a big, brave game. But didn't have enough of you-know-what gahonies to go pick up a rifle, as Colonel Mason Jessup said, and stand post. And as Colonel Nathan Jessup said in A Few Good Men, I don't give a darn what you think. The Rush Limbaughs, the Sean Hannitys, the O'Reillys, the Newt Gingriches, the Mitt Romneys, the George W. Bushes, who did not stand post. He was AWOL more days than not. And the only way to prove it is to find his DD-214. Because that has your entire military history on it. And it isn't it convenient that he can't find his? We were in the same time in the military, and I can go upstairs right now in my attic and find 50 copies? Because they give you enough copies when you get out. A man who got into the National Guard ahead of ever. Oh, it was 250 or 300 people? Got into a National Guard outfit flying obsolete aircraft that were never going to fly in any military action. Then used, which was the 102s. They were the 102s he was flying. Delta Darts. That's what we call them. I was in the Air Force, too. F-4s and 111s. We were flying them over there. When I got over there, they were decommissioning those 102s, and they were replaced by the F-4s, the squad. Decommissioned. Matter of fact, they even used them for ADC, which is Air Defense Command, the 102s. They were using some of them still in the United States to protect our perimeter. But the ones he was working on were completely obsolete. They couldn't protect a city block. He was an outfit that was never going to go overseas because they were in a decommissioned outfit that did not have any capability. That's one of the reasons why he was doing something on a political trip. But a lot of times it seems to be, I don't say AWOL, but he couldn't account for it. That's why you never saw the DD-214. Never. But that's another whole story. We'll get into that some other time. But we got these chicken heads. 80%, more than 80% of the Republicans who are claiming they are on the right side of the military for this country are lying through their teeth. They lie. And
Al Sharpton, I keep bringing this up. What do liars do? They lie. They lie. You tell the lie long enough and hard enough, and some people who are low information people start to believe it. But it ain't true. Just because you say it. It ain't true just because you say it. Now, Mitt Romney, on the other hand, where did he go? France. What did he do? Oh, he was on a religious trip in France. The same place where the Carl Rose wanted to say, we need to make American fries and not French fries. The same place we despise as elitists. But there's no record of what he did over there. He only came back after the war was over, or practically over, where his number couldn't be called. It's a disgrace. Nobody asked these questions. You ever notice any of these shows when you have these people interviewing and they say, well, why didn't he ask that question? You know why? Because they want them to come back on the show. And if they're given too many hard questions, they will not come back on the show. So they're not given hard questions to ask. You may think they're hard questions, but they're not hard questions to ask. But we'll get back to some more of these questions. Right now we got another caller. Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello, caller.
Yes, hello. This is Diane Little, Union County.
Diane Little, first vice chair of Union County Democratic Party. Am I correct?
Yes, you're correct, Mr. Lawson. How are you?
Fine. How are you? And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the sunny state of Orlando, Florida.
Orlando, Florida?
Yeah.
So I guess you won't be here for the big meet tomorrow either.
Well, I'm working on a flight because it's that important.
Working on a flight. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Is your hubby, Mr. Lee Little, with you?
Obviously, yes. Absolutely.
You're down there in Florida doing what? Oh, well, it's Mother's Day, right, this weekend?
Mother's Day. My mother is down here. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Family first. Yeah.
Tell her hello.
I will. She's recuperating well. She's doing good. Thank you very much.
And what do you have for us today?
Well, I called because I was listening. I was listening to you and Gracie, and got some very good information, and also I understand the feelings of everybody. We're yearning to have leadership in our state party, and it's unfortunate that we haven't had, and it's such a bad time. Not that it's any time is a good time to be in shambles, but it's such a bad time for us to be at each other's throats and not having legitimacy in our leadership in the state. And it's just unfortunate. We've got the leader of the world coming to our state, and we're not offering him the red carpet that we should by acting the way we're acting. I think it's unfortunate. However, what I wanted to say to you is that I wanted to give you some names so that we at least know who's thinking about running. We never know what's going to happen with nominations from the floor, but tomorrow for chair, of course, there's Marianne Baldwin, David Parker. I've gotten a couple of emails, not from him, but people supporting him to keep him in office. So he will be one of the nominees. And then, of course, possibly Gwen. And Bill Faison told me that if he didn't get past the primary, he was going to put his hat in the ring for chair.
Then oh, for is that second, right?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Then for second vice chair, we're looking at Zach Hawkins, Brenda Pollard, and McNair. What's her name? Reva McNair.
Oh, Reva McNair, okay.
Yeah. And then for secretary, so far, all I have is Max Adams and T.E. Austin. So I just wanted to say to all the Democrats, one thing about us, we have a big tent. We're big-hearted people. We're opinionated people, but it's because we care. I believe we can certainly recover from all of this, but I think the recovery will depend on good, sound leadership. And whether it's a woman or a man, whether it's a young person or an older person who has the wisdom to get us through this, it doesn't matter. It just has to be someone with the tenacity for integrity, as far as I'm concerned, and certainly someone who has, under this big tent, you have to have long tentacles so that you outreach and involve everyone. I've seen chairs in the last 6 or 7 years have tentacles that are short. They have a group of people, a clique of people, and they operate within that clique. And anybody who's outside doesn't get served, or either they're what's important to them doesn't even get brought to the table. But I'd like to see someone with long tentacles in this big tent to do some outreach. I'd like to see something like rallies, geographical rallies, Democratic rallies in different areas, maybe 3 or 4 right. geographical areas where, you know, the party springs for the meet and everybody brings a side so that we can get together and talk with one another. We don't talk with one another. And that's why no one wants to really be involved.
Yeah, but can that be done? It can't be done by tomorrow.
No. I'm just saying a leader has to opinion that type of feel, that they need every Democrat to do their job, and they do. You don't just get into the chair's job and you're autonomous. You have to use and utilize the Democrats' boots on the ground, staff, everybody has value, and I think that's what's been missing.
Okay, I want you to hold on because there's somebody else coming up on the phone here that might want to ask you a question. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello, who's this?
Kim Ratliff.
Kim Ratliff, the new designee county commissioner.
Wow.
From Mecklenburg County in Charlotte, North Carolina. Came in first place, I understand. Came in first place, I understand, in the 12-person race.
That is correct.
Good
for
you,
Kim. I have the first vice chair for the Union County Democratic Party on the phone, Diane Little. Diane, do you have anything to ask Kim?
I don't have anything to ask her. I just want, if I was near her, I'd hug her. Good for you, because Kim Kim has been one of those boots on the ground that I'm talking about. I've watched her work, and we're right next door to one another. And anything I go to, Kim is there, and she's not so opinionated that it gets lost. But when she says something, it makes a lot of sense. So I'm so happy that Mecklenburg was smart enough to harness her energy before she got tired and walked away.
Thank you so
much. Well, I guess you don't have to run now. You can just take the position because you're going to win. I mean, that's it. Nothing needs to be said anymore.
Well, that's great. And there's also an opportunity for me to make a little history as I win.
That's right.
Well, it wouldn't be just a little history. It's going to be a lot of history. And the reason why she won, you know, Diane, is because she was the visible choice.
Yeah, I have my husband brought home one of her flyers. And I thought that was so funny, the visible choice. I like that.
Thank you. It definitely worked.
Yeah.
It definitely worked.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I heard some of the things that she was about. And I know that education is on the forefront, as it should be in Charlotte. It's just a shame that this state that used to be so innovative and have such a great educational system and was number, I think, 3 or 4 on the list as early as 2002, and now you're 46 or, you know, or thereabouts, 46, 47. Something happened.
47.
And I know it wasn't the children, and I know it wasn't the teachers, so it had to be the politicians. And I just I just like to hear, where do you start? Where do you start? I know what you said you want to do, but where do you start to right this wrong and to try to catch some of our kids before they fall through the cracks?
Well, one of the main things would be definitely is to work with the school board, the local school board here, as well as the General Assembly, to try and get us back on track.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Go ahead.
I definitely wanted to add to what Diane was saying about the rallies and all of that. As a leader of the Democratic Party, we also need someone not only is going to bring everybody together across the state, but someone who can raise the money and keep the party going. We don't want to always be embarrassed when it comes time to do something and we're nickel and diming everybody. We need ongoing financial money in the pot that we can take from when it's time to get something done, not have to go and beg and borrow from this person to get it done.
Well, one of the things that has come up in this outrageous race for the chair of the Democratic Party was that there was this sinister letter going around stating that our Secretary of State was in collusion with other people to steal the money of the tax checkoff to give to the elected officials.
Well, anybody
now, we're about $1.3 million, and this is so—it's so outrageous a statement that it's almost like it came out of Fox News.
Anybody that knows Elaine knows better than that. And we shouldn't even dignify that with responding because that's just a hater. And one thing about haters, I don't care about them. As long as they can spell my name right, I don't care about haters. Everybody knows that Elaine's integrity, the reason why she's still where she is because of her integrity. So you know better than that. But I want to get back to raising this money because she's right.
Well,
you have to raise money in order to put your best foot forward. In other words, you have to get dressed real clean in order to appear as though that you're going out. I get it. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I raised $1.2 million for my church. My church had a capital campaign. I was the capital campaign director. And in a year, I raised $1.2 million for my church in little old Monroe. And the way I did it, and this is on a smaller scale, but the way I did it was inclusion. We're talking from the community in, not the church out, the community in. This is what we want to do. We had all kinds of potlucks. We went and had seminars. Everything wasn't about just church. It was about including and making everyone part of the community. Even within the church, people that never spoke, we made them secretaries and team leaders. And you have to endear people to say, I have a nickel in that quarter, and I'm a part of this mechanism. So in little old Monroe, if we can raise $1.2 million, it seems to me we should have a leader who, without having, everybody has intentions. But let the intentions be that I want to be the chair for the next 2-4 years so that they are ingrained enough to care. And that's something I haven't seen.
Well, you said that. Now, going to you, the problem that I see is that it don't matter what the county commission wants. If we got the regressive party in control of the purse strings in Raleigh, you got zero.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to send it down here.
Yeah. That's it.
And everybody's always chasing the great state of Mecklenburg.
What's that?
Yeah.
I think everybody's always hating on the great state of Mecklenburg as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's the other reason why I'm not going to get a dime. That's
We have to be awake when they're asleep. They created in Union County, for instance, a district called District 55. District 55 looks like a swollen hand. In other words, they went and grabbed certain rural types of people from every which way that they could. They eliminated the African-American community, and what they set up was certain that would be a Republican seat. District 55, brand new seat. We have a gentleman, Dan Nelson, who just won the primary because he had opposition. Fantastic candidate, and we've got to take our money and push him. The ones that are getting into office that we know that they have a sure shot, that's nice. You know, canvas for them, do what you can. But people like this Mr. Nelson, we've got to act like this is the campaign of our lives for him. Because if they get another seat, then they have another crazy teabag of voice in the legislature.
Well, Kim, I know you got to run, so I'd like you to tie up some information, how people can assist you, how they, you know, if you want to thank anybody. Just give us about a minute or so of some information.
Well, definitely want to thank your listeners. I think I've been on your show somewhere between 3 or 4 times during the primary, and I'm very appreciative of that for you and your time and your listeners. People can still check out my website, which is www.kimformetcounty.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. You can sign up to be a volunteer, which I'm going to need double what I had in the primary. You can also donate money to my campaign, which I'm going to need more of going into the November election. And I will say I ran a pretty good grassroots campaign, and I want to be capable to do that again. I've got to increase what I did in the primary. So I need more volunteers, need more money, need to be even more places than a website, Facebook, and Twitter. So if you have any kind of neighborhood association, any kind of Greek organizations, church functions, whatever you have going on that I could come and partake in, please do not hesitate. Send me a message through my website. The message comes directly to me. I will be the one to respond. So, again, my website is www.kimformetcounty.com. And I'll even give out my mobile number since everybody has it anyway. It's 704-502-8984. And the one thing I will say about me is I'm accessible. I will call you back if I don't answer when you call me. And you can send me an email. I'll respond to that as well. Because I'm the visible choice, Kim.
The
Michelle.
Visible choice. The visible choice.
The
is
visible
Kim choice. And Kim, I thank you.
Thank you for taking your part.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you, sir.
Diane, I want you to stay. I want you to stay. I have 2 other calls here. Some. Let's see here. And.
Did Gwen call in yet?
Let's see. Who picked up here? Hello there. Who's this?
This is Gwen.
Ah!
Speak up.
Hi. Hi, Michael.
Just mentioned your name.
Really? I hope it was good.
Your name. We have a, let me see. There's someone else calling in. Hold on 1 minute. Let me see who this is. And who
Did
is this on the line? Who is
Zach Hawkins.
Zach Hawkins. Oh, my gosh. We got Zach and we got Gwen.
Hi, Zach.
And we have Diane Little.
And
what
Brian.
Are we, what
Diane.
The, well, now we
Gwen.
Have Gwen. Gwen,
yes.
I don't know how long you've been in the queue, but what are you, I understand you're on your way back from a funeral.
Yes, and I wanted to tell you, I won't stay on long. I'm on 95, but I do have my earpiece. Yeah, but I can chit-chat for a minute.
Okay. So tell us what's going on tomorrow.
Well, we're having a state executive committee meeting where, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're having a state executive committee meeting in Greensboro where we will elect officers for vacant slots, and we will also elect the DNC members. Now,
and,
these DNC, but no, these DNC members will not take office until the convention this year ends, which is September.
How many people you have to have for a quorum?
We have to have, I believe it's 40%.
And it's my estimation, that might be in the danger of not having a quorum.
I'm hoping people will. I realize it's Mother's Day weekend. I realize a lot of colleges and universities are having graduations, but, Michael, it is what it is. We have some business, important business to conduct, and so I'm hoping people will come. It's early enough in the morning where they could get back and still enjoy their Saturday afternoon. So I'm hoping they will, you know, take the time and even, you know, they need to bring family members with you. I think it's important that all family members see how the process works.
Well, listen, that it's nice of you to say that. I think they'll be back. I have never been up there and out of there on time. Never, ever, ever. Are you kidding me?
We've got a lot to do, but I still think we will be out at a decent time.
Sorry, what have you seen this ludicrous letter that has been running around?
I've seen quite a few ludicrous letters. which one are you specifically referring to?
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, since that's the case, well, we don't have time enough to talk about all the ludicrous letters, but I want to know the position. There was an article I saw early, I think it was at 2 o'clock, that said, and it came from someone, a spokesperson for the, I believe it was the White House, that said that if the president is so upset about what's happened in North Carolina that if he had this chance to do it over again, it would not be here.
I have not seen that. As I said, I'm on the road, so I had not seen that.
And it's a shame that it has come down to this.
Until I hear the president himself say that.
No, he didn't say that.
Right, and that's what I said. Until I hear the president himself say that, you know, like you said, another ludicrous letter, I hope.
Yeah, right. Well, what is your position as far as what's going on up there tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I will go, and when David resigns, if that happens, the state executive committee has to accept the resignation. So I'm, you know, hoping we will have enough people in place for a forum, and, you know, Michael, let the chips fall where they may.
Right.
I mean, there is a possibility that he has his supporters too, and there's a possibility we have to think about that maybe his supporters will win. If they don't, we have to be prepared for, you know, if he doesn't.
Zach, you're on the line. Zach, you're still there, right? Zach?
I am.
Yes, I understand, and I just found out today that you were going to throw your hat in the ring for the second vice chair.
Yes, sir. I made it about a week ago after having some conversations kind of both internally and around the state. You know, I felt like my time was now to step up and give some leadership at a critical time in our party's history, in our country's history. Everything here that we worked for 4 years ago is at stake. And even though we were suffered a small defeat, you know, with Amendment 1, I think we can circle the wagons, really start to train our people, really start to communicate effectively, really start to make sure all the constituencies are fed the way that they need to, and really go into November roaring and make sure this is a great convention.
Well, the thing is that I'm not impressed about this Amendment 1. It's going to go to court anyway. It's probably going to be defeated in court because none of these have made it in court. But the thing is that we're talking about it got 61%, but it got 61% of probably of a 12% vote of the entire populace. So, I mean,
right.
This really is nothing.
Right, exactly. And so I think and that's the piece, you know, and so the fight, you know, has to continue because we know that's not reflective of North Carolina's progressive nature. And so that's just the key. We just know this is North Carolina is better than that, and we know that we're a little bit more progressive than that.
Now, also, Gwen, I wanted to ask you, if supposedly there's two women, if you're nominated from the floor, and the other woman, Marianne Baldwin, if she's nominated, if Marianne wins, what happens to your position as first vice chair?
I remain the first vice chair. What I will lose is the seat on the DNC.
Yeah.
And I believe the ASDC also. But, Michael, let me make it clear that even though if that should happen, my first priority is to the Democratic Party of our state. If I lose a seat on the DNC, you know, or the ASDC, I hate it. But if it happens, it happens. I will still fulfill my term as first vice.
Okay, but why would you lose your seat?
It's the way the bylaws and the DNC are written. If a woman is the chair, it's the next highest male officer that would be the other delegate.
Okay, so that would be Zach then, if he won.
Yes, if he won, yes, Zach.
Gwen, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
He segued right where I was going, because people that are listening may not understand the appointment situation being elected as opposed to being elected when we're in the and when we're electing officers. That all these positions we're talking about are actually appointments, and yours would be the hierarchy, which would be the natural order of things if the chair steps down. So could you give us some background about what we're doing tomorrow?
Well, you're asking a couple things. You say what we're doing. We're probably going to end up electing a new chair.
Okay.
If that happens, if David Parker does resign as expected, and if his resignation is accepted, if I am nominated, I intend to run. If someone thinks enough of me to nominate me, I will not decline the nomination. I will run. If I win, then there will be an election for first vice, and there still be one for second vice and secretary.
Okay.
Okay, the question I have asked Zach, would you change it to run for a first vice if Gwen was elected as chair?
That's a game time decision. I think right now I'm pretty dedicated to doing the second vice chair piece, because again, all of them can be carved out, meaning that all of them can have purpose. But right now, I'm pretty dedicated to that. That's something that we just can't control, because I know there's varying levels of support all across the state, and it's almost like March Madness. anything can happen.
You're right.
So I'm a terrible bracketologist, so I won't even attempt to predict what's going to happen.
Hey, Michael, I hate to go, but I'm going to have to get off of here.
Okay.
But I would like to just say I hope everyone comes tomorrow and do their duty, what they're supposed to do for the Democratic Party. If you were elected to the SEC, I hope you take the time to come. I realize it's a huge it's a lot to ask on this weekend, but we really need you there. We really need your vote, however this turns out. And as we always say in the elections, you know, if you don't vote, you can't complain.
And don't forget proxies. Don't forget proxies.
Exactly. Yep. All right. Thanks, everybody.
I want to thank you. Zach, hold on. Okay, for a minute. Okay, Gwen, thank you. Zach.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Why do I have two? Okay, I got another call in here. Zach, what I wanted to know, now, you used to be the third vice chair.
No, I was president of the Young Democrats for 2 years.
You were what?
I was state president of the Young Democrats.
Right, state chair of the Democrats, Young Democrats. And what have you found as when you were chair for a little while of the Young Democrats? What have you found about that group, their progression in the Democratic Party?
I think we were I served as vice president, and during that time we really started to take more action in campaigning directly and electing Democrats. During my time as president, we started to get more issue-oriented. We backed the, you know, anti-bullying measures, same-day voter registration. We then later started to, you know, insert our folks around the state and, you know, elected office in varying levels in the party, running for DNC seats and, you know, having our folks serve on the state exec. And so people have really started, that's the progression that's happened. And so I think it's been pretty natural from those that I, you know, kind of personally appointed, helped, and then people that I just saw come through the ranks. We're kind of at this place where, you know, the time, I guess, for new leadership is now. And so these people over the, you know, the course of 8 years have gone from, you know, fresh-faced, 22-year-olds to, you know, people that have kind of grown and seen and become veterans in their own right as it relates to being involved in campaigns, being in the party, and understand what it takes to get it done. And so that, some of it was absolutely earned. Some of it was because of kind of the right time, and being around success prepares you for success. You know, hence the 2008 elections. But I think we're really at a good place with building our bench to have young Democratic leaders going henceforth.
Okay, hold on. I think somebody might have a question for you. Let me see who this is here.
Zach, this is Diane Little. How you doing?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. Doing fine. Glad to see you put your hat in the ring. What I wanted to ask you, there are two other candidates, Brenda Pollard and Reva McNair, who have also been courageous enough to put their hats in the ring. And I wanted to know from you, do you know Reva and Brenda?
Being, you know, moving around statewide, I've had the opportunity to meet both of them. Brenda's actually, you know, closer to me in proximity than Reva, but I know them, you know, equally. And I think they're fine people. And I think it's, you know, this is the part of the process. And, you know, everyone has things to bring to the table. So I look forward to kind of, you know, hearing their ideas and potentially taking their ideas and working with them as I go forth as the second vice.
Right. Well, what I wanted to know is, if you knew a little bit about them, I wanted to know what sets you apart, because I've sort of done my homework on anybody that's running. I start doing my homework because you want a shoe that fits, you know? So I wanted to know what sets you apart.
Well, I think, kind of reflective of North Carolina is, you know, my own journey, meaning that I'm, you know, at a place where, I've been involved. I have, you know, on level statewide, locally, understanding issues, raising a child, you know, building a household. And so I'm in the midst of where North Carolina's going as a state, in progression, and moving from a small eastern North Carolina town to a more progressive place of understanding our state. And I just think, you know, likewise, I'm at that space. So that's one thing. Kind of secondly, I would have to absolutely say I'm more, you know, progressive, and my views and my values. That's something that's progressed over time. But I think I'm, you know, going to be able to connect and speak the language of a broader range of North Carolinians than they will. The third piece, and this is, you know, something I have control over, but you know, being younger. And being a part of what the future holds for our state. And other than that, I think, again, they're fine people. But I think, at the end of the day, with, right now, I work to preserve the environment, which is something that both key to myself and to the party. I've worked for the greater good, you know, and helping, you know, people get what they need in the community when I was out in the United Way. I've served as a public school teacher, kind of been on the ground level. All of these things are, you know, my journey through life is very well matched to the things that I do. And so I can't speak to what they do. I can only speak to what I do. But those are the things that kind of ultimately set me apart from them and I think will help me be successful in moving the party forward through the election.
Okay, well, what are the duties of the second vice and how do you feel, what do you bring besides what you just told me, which is great biographical information, what skill set do you bring to the table to initiate and even exceed the expectations of the second vice chair?
Yeah, well, I think I alluded to that a little earlier with, you know, the way that there's a varying understanding of what, you know the chairs do. And so I'm at a place where, you know, my first kind of business would be to define specifically what I'm going to do. And so, it was just something that I think is just proper because people elect you to do something. And so you should have a specific purpose. That's number one. And secondly, the skill set, you know, that I hope to bring to the table, which will lead to the job that I'll do, is, you know, kind of excellence in being able to communicate the message. And that's the varying levels. That's to the LGBT. That's to, you know, African-American. That's to women populations. That's to young people. That's to educators, you know, name one, right, environmentalists. Being able to, you know, kind of corral those constituency groups and communicate the message effectively. I was an organizer. I ran multiple campaigns, understand that, making sure that trainings happen, making sure that things are going down down to the precinct level if need be, or at least, you know, an overall plan for how they can be successful. And give tips according to what the chair says and how he directs us with help work into fundraising. And so those are just three. You know, those are, you know, first I want to make sure that I'm defining what I do. And then those three skill sets that I named are ways that I think over the next 8 months I can really be effective.
Well, I think that's great. I think that certainly if you get in there and define the job, people will actually know what it does.
Exactly.
I have a caller coming in, Diane. Hold on just a minute. And who is this?
This is Christian Schneider.
Christian Schneider. Oh, Christian Schneider from the left coast.
That's right. And I was listening to your show, and I heard Zach Hawkins. And, you know, I don't know the other candidates in the race. I want to be honest about that. But I remember dealing with Zach when I was in North Carolina. And I have to say, from a political professional point of view, I've never seen an arm of the Democratic Party so well organized as the Young Democrats when he was president. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, the North Carolina Democratic Party is really moving in the right direction with a lot of very, very solid candidates for party leadership in the form of Zach Hawkins and Frank Eaton.
Wait a minute. I mean, hey, Zach, is this a plant call or what?
This is not.
No, it's not. Thank you, Christian. I really appreciate that.
I don't even know if Zach remembers me.
I do. This is, it's been, what, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
That's right. I have to say that in state to state that I've gone to, North Carolina ruined me. Because I go to state, and I'm like, let me see your Young Democrats. And they're just not, you know, it wasn't the same
level. You mean they're all old Democrats?
No, it's just not the same level of organization. It's not the same level of engagement and excitement and activism and involvement. And at the same time, like, really knowing what they're doing.
One of the words that I can bring to the table for you, Christian, is unity. it's something that I noticed when Zach was head of the YGs. And what he did was, I remember one of the YGs was running for a position, and every YG in that room went up to the podium with the person, well, at least went to the front of the room in support. And I remembered watching that unity, and I said, aha, there's a leader here, because that means that they are of one mind. Not that they all think alike, but they have a mission. What I saw is unity.
Diane, are you outside? Because I'm hearing a lot of noise in the background.
Oh yeah, I'm poolside. Come on.
Thank you. Hey. Hey. Well, Kristen. Kristen.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
There.
No, I'm here.
Well, Zach has always been, as I can say myself, when I first met him and when he was the YG president, has always been a major role model for the other YGs, and I think would give a very, very good, reasonable input to this party that needs reasonable input.
Mm-hmm. Didn't YDs win like best young Democratic group in like in the country when Zach was president?
Zach?
Yeah, some of our clubs did.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, and I really mean this, you know, you guys have what's called a good problem right now. You have all these great candidates stepping up to really solidify and take the, you know, the party in a new dynamic direction in an important cycle.
Well, this is just more than an important cycle. The thing is that I've been saying this to everybody, the real thing that has to be done is to win back the assembly and the Senate in North Carolina, because at this point in time, it don't matter who the governor is. If we don't control the Senate and the Assembly, we're up the creek without a paddle. We're not going to be 47th in school education. We'll be 64th in the world in school education, because they have cut everything but, you see, they cut the arms, they cut the legs. Now they're trying to cut the head. That will be the last straw for this state in education if we do not take back the House and the Senate. Zach, you still there? Hey, Zach, are you still there? Christian, are you there?
Yeah, well, I would say from a political standpoint, you know, it's like a three-legged stool. You know, you can't take away one of those legs and expect it to remain stable. I think, you know, a solid push, and I think this strategy has worked before.
Well, yeah, but see, but that's
push
the
on
whole
every
strategy.
Single level.
But that's the whole strategy. They want the chair to fall over. The rest of the party. They want it to fall over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we, go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, you shouldn't ignore the governor's race either. I mean, that is the highest elected position in the state.
No, I'm not saying ignore it, because if we take back the House and the Assembly, the governor's race will come, because that means more of us got out there.
I see what you're saying, Mike. You're saying activate locally in order to build up the party to culminate at the top.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the same thing where, because I'm a great believer in changing the whole way the voter, when we vote for elected officials, is laid out. I don't believe the president should be at the top of the ticket. I don't believe the governor should be down there. I think what needs to be done first is the judges, then the elected officials from the county commissioner all the way up, then the House, then the Senate, then the governor, then the president. Because these people need to go through the ballot. Because most people, they, what they do is they go in and they vote for the first man, which is the president, and they clear it out. It's just like, and matter of fact, you can see what happened here with this bill that was passed here in the state this year. I mean, like yesterday, what they did, or on Tuesday, what they did was they came in, they didn't vote for the elected officials, they voted for or against the ballot. And even only now, and they're saying it won by 61%, but it's 12% voted. So you got 12% of 61%.
Right. That was a real heartbreaker, I have to say, from the other side of the country. And being in California and having worked on Prop 8 in California, seeing that issue occur in North Carolina as well was pretty heartbreaking.
Absolutely, as I said, I'm in favor of having us vote for everybody, saving the president and the governor for last. People need to know that they have to. These people just. They're just not wasting paper by putting people's names down on the ballot. They need to vote for these people.
So are you saying that the party needs to be the unifying factor in motivating and organizing the activists on local precinct level?
Absolutely. Because they're not motivating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like what the minister said. Oh, they'll self deport the illegal aliens. Not, it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
people,
but Christian, you know what, Mike? I believe that the message has to be not only developed but facilitated by the party. I think the party is in the center of all of this. And the party has to help facilitate the message. Because if I'm
Absolutely.
A candidate and I know where my party stands, the ideology of the Democratic Party is what keeps me. Certainly not the people and not the work. It's the ideology that keeps me from going somewhere else. So if the message is sound and the ideology is there, then I have something to run on. I can talk about the environment and use a historical message from my party. I can talk about civil unions for same-sex unions and have a history in my party. I can talk about civil rights. I can talk about those things and have an ideology of my party to run on. So if the party is fractured, disorganized, and having problems and mistrust is flowing down, then I'm a candidate on the outside saying, I can't rely on my party because they have so much going on. They don't have time for me. Yet I'm out here holding the party's flag. I'm waving the party's flag, but its message is fractured. So certainly the party is important when it comes to candidates running. We have some new candidates. We, as Democrats, we've done some strategy. We've tried to, even some of this crazy redistricting, we have attempted to bring some really good candidates, some courageous people who have said, yes, I'm going to run, but they need us, and we're not there.
Well, now, this has been a position that Christian has run into out there in southern San Diego. Tell us something about that, Christian.
Well, you know, we have open primaries now in California, which means
that
top
means
two
penguins
vote getters
can run. That means the penguins can run if they want.
Well, it means the top two vote getters move on from the primary to the general. And I live in, or I'm working in a heavily Democratic district, which is Congressman Bob Filner's district. And he's retiring to run for mayor of San Diego. But what has now happened is California politics are big deal politics. Even local races are several hundred thousand dollar races. So we have a congressional race with seven candidates in it, and it's been completely locked down by the party, by local labor, where you can't talk to a Democratic club. You can't talk to – once they made a statewide endorsement before the ballots even – I'm sorry, before people were even onto the ballot, they made a statewide endorsement of a particular candidate. So you can't have access at all to any club, to the party, to any of its resources. And we're still in the primary. I mean, the top three people in the primary right now are all Democrats, and yet we can't talk to Democratic voters. Because the party's gotten involved, you know. And local labor made an endorsement. Labor's very powerful out here. Back in last October, before the redistricting lines had even been drawn, they had nominated somebody. So here's a good example of where, you know, sometimes too strong of a party can weight a primary in such a fashion that we shouldn't be making decisions for the people on who they should be being able to elect. I mean, that's what our primaries are for, to create energetic debate, vet our candidates, you know, have a bit of a trial by fire, and then at the end say, okay, you know what, whoever wins, we're all going to work together. But we need that contentiousness to start out. You know, and we have to remember, our party is a big tent party. We have several different points of view within our own party. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to have a unified message, and it's been the troubling factor in many elections for Democrats, because, you know, if you say to a Democrat, well, what do you think about taxes, right? They'll give you, you know, you ask 10 Democrats, you're going to get 10 different answers. You ask a Republican, they're going to say no taxes. That's it.
Yes,
they have one message, and it's clear.
Right, but you said that if you ask 10 Democrats, they will, mm-hmm. you'll get 10 different types of answers, but you're not going to hear no taxes. And that's what I'm saying, is that at least, no, we should certainly not have a heavy hand on things, but we've got to be able to carry that message, because we're the get-out-the-vote people. We're the people boots on the ground, and it's the party. To me, it's the party's responsibility to make sure that they forward the party's ideology through their candidates, not a heavy hand. We've got some Western congressmen who are not for abortion. They're Democrats, but they're not for abortion. I don't say right for life, because we all are right for life, or else we'd be killing ourselves. We are for
we're all not for abortion either.
No, but the tenets of the Democratic Party is a woman has at least the right to choose.
Absolutely.
Nobody's anti-life. No one's anti-life, but if you ask 10 different Democrats, you'll get 10 different answers, but they all will have the tenet of, in the final analysis, a woman has the right, it's her body, to choose.
I would fully agree with that, and I would say, you know, that's some of the issues that you see sometimes, geographically speaking, in the difference between parties. You know, for example, Southern California is very, very different than Northern California. Mm-hmm. You know, Northern California is considered to be extremely liberal, whereas Southern California, you know, we tend to have more blue dogs.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys are all familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
The blue dogs. Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Blue dogs.
That's the problem. That's why we're in the position we are right now. Go ahead.
Right.
So, you know, the thing is that, I want to sort of tie this in together. What does it look like? And you have a candidate out there in California, don't you?
I do. He's the first African American to run for U.S. Congress in this district. You know, his name's John Brooks. He spent 30 years in the Department of Interior as a special agent in the Fish and Wildlife. After 9/11, he volunteered to be an air marshal. You know, he comes from a family that, you know, migrated from the South up to Oakland during the war, World War II, to work the ports. You know, several of his members of his family are veterans and union members. And that's why it's a little bit heartbreaking that you have such a great candidate like this and, you know, party politics has taken such a heavy hand that I can't introduce new potential leadership.
Right.
You know, sitting there saying, hey, look, you know, we have these great leaders out there and and you're just not activating the African-American community down here other than just for votes. You know,
right.
You'll don a hoodie in state Senate and say, oh, we're for Trayvon, but you ignore the fact in your own district that, you know, that African-American students are suspended at three times the rate as any other student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we recall, that's why Trayvon was home that day.
That's right. And they've taken
right.
the tension out of the school so that you do have to be home. You no longer can do an hour or 2 hours detention. They've taken the funds from that and put them into other schools for other things. They did that here in Union County.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
And our platform here is the idea that education leads the way for reinvigorating the economy, for protecting things like Social Security, veterans benefits, and things like that, that we need to stop talking about how we cut from education and instead talking about how we're investing in education and making dramatic investments in education. You know, if you went to one of these huge corporations and you said, okay, guys, you don't get to do research and development anymore, the first thing they're going to say to you is how do we stay competitive?
That's right.
So, John believes that.
Isn't that the problem? One of the problems down here in what district down in San Diego are you involved with?
We're in the 51st district. You know, and the 51st district has some of the most dramatic achievement gaps out of anywhere in California for low-income, Latino, and African-American students. You know, you're seeing a huge disparity where some schools are, you know, only 15% of kids are actually getting to the first year of college.
Wow.
You know, and by no mistake, it also has the highest unemployment rate in the country at over 30%.
Well, you were also telling me that 15% are getting to college, but two-year college, I mean,
right.
it's taking, 60% of them 5 years to graduate.
Right. So out of that 15% that get to that first year of college, you then see a 33% drop-off.
Sure.
That are able to even get through the first year of college in 2 years. And I'm not talking about like going to MIT. I'm talking about a local community college.
Yeah.
So they're basically now just pushing these kids through the system to try to keep up with, the requirements of No Child Left Behind and other strict statewide requirements for graduation and promotion.
So in other words, what we're doing is we're promoting non-education just to keep them moving on.
Right, and this increases our unemployment rate, you know, because there's only so many jobs, and I mean jobs in the sense of like working at a Walmart or working at a McDonald's. There's only so many of those jobs. We're not giving our children the opportunity for career employment.
That's right.
Know, career opportunities. We're not providing the training. And, you know, if we just cut the dropout rate in half, just cutting the dropout rate in half, which you know, decimates African-American communities, you would see, at least in California, you would see approximately $1.5 billion inserted into the economy immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, year one.
Because you would develop professionals at that level. You're going to graduate these people. They have credentials. And then they're going to go on and maybe go on to other schools, other skill schools or trade schools or higher education. And that's how you develop professionals. And so when you
Correct.
Don't have, you're talking about 15%. I bet you 3% is the graduation rate out of that 15. Because the one half that don't have the credentials to even get through the classes and need tutoring in classes, the other half can't afford it once they get in there. Sometimes I remember buying a book in school and it was $100. Times that by 3 or 4 classes. So we're talking finances and we're talking a lack of commitment to kids in public school under the 12th grade.
And you're also, you had mentioned to me before something about that the they had these green jobs that were coming to, and where's this location at? Well, what part of San Diego?
So this district goes from the coast of San Diego, so the Pacific Ocean, all along the border of Mexico to Arizona. So this is basically, I'm standing right now in the desert. Where I'm calling
okay.
you from.
And
about
what was the name?
It's Imperial County. I'm in a town called El Centro, which is the has been ranked consistently the worst place in America to live. And about 2 miles away from me is, you know, where the Blue Angels are located at the Air Force Base. Now, the interesting dynamic about this area is two different things. One is it's one of the largest agricultural producers in the country. 2/3 of the vegetables that we eat during the winter months come from right here.
Wow.
The other is that billions upon billions of dollars in green tech is slated to be spent here on solar energy projects, on wind farms, on things like this. But the workforce here and the people here will never see a dime of it because they're not trained to do this building. They're not trained as engineers, as architects. They're not even trained to build the roads or to maintain these projects. So you're basically going to have an influx of money that comes into here, and the people that are going to make out are, you know, the Applebee's and the Chili's and all the local hotels.
These companies are going to bring their own people with them because there's
absolutely.
Not enough educated people there to hire.
Not only
absolutely.
That, look what happened to California when they had the computer explosion in California. We didn't have, and I say we, the United States, didn't have the educated people. We didn't have the population to take those high-tech jobs. And so I have friends who are Indian and Japanese and, you know, everybody from everywhere else came in and took those jobs. That's why you have such an influx of diversity from Seattle all the way down to Northern California because of what happened during the tech explosion.
Right. And at the same time, though, we do want to encourage that because a little known fact, you know, and I'm sure this affects people in North Carolina a lot, when you talk about immigration, most people mm-hmm. think immigration and they equate it to, like, a Mexican taking my job. But the truth is that 25% of new small businesses are started by families that immigrate to the United States.
Yeah.
It is vital to the economy, absolutely vital that we have open and progressive immigration laws, and that we, you know, create ways to reunify families, to attract, because remember, the United States, as much as we're good manufacturers, what we really do best is we innovate. And we attract the brightest people in the world to come help us strengthen our country. That's that's how we've always operated.
Right, but we don't want it to be just them. We have to be in the game too. We have to make sure that our needs, that the people who we've raised in these public schools and our higher education, that they get the jobs as well. Nothing wrong with diversity. I'd be the last one to say that there was. But it's important to have some sort of balance. And the reason why I say that is because when, there are a lot of people who believe that someone took their job, or, oh, I would be working in such and such a place if it wasn't for the fact that they hired someone else. We can't let these corporations get in the mindset when they do innovate and they do have something that's going to skyrocket their profits, that all they think about is going overseas for someone to man it. We have to let, like Bill Gates attempted to do, is to reach down into the public schools and raise those kids and those great minds up so that when these corporations have this innovation, we're there too.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. We just can't – the thing is, it one doesn't necessarily detract from the other. You know, great innovation from you know, our kids will attract great innovation from outside the United States. But the point of what I said before about new businesses being opened up is those are job-creating businesses.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, an immigrant family comes here with, you know, and the guy's got new technology or the girl wants to open up a business, that creates jobs for everybody. This isn't an either-or situation. This is a both situation. You know, we need to educate and train our own work base so that when we have these opportunities, you know, we can employ them. But at the same time, we also need policy that invites outside innovation to set up here.
Yeah.
To say, okay, yeah, now we want to use that educated, empowered workforce you have to do this.
That's right.
Okay. Right. We got a minute left here. And Christian, give us – I'd like to have Mr. Brooks back on the show. I did have him on one time, so maybe we set that up for next week. And just tie up. You got 30 seconds to tie up in, 30 seconds for Dinah to tie up. Go ahead, Christian.
Hey, I just wanted to say thank you. I didn't mean to hijack your conversation here.
Yes, you did.
You know, I think
you did.
I think you, you know, the North Carolina Democratic Party has some phenomenal candidates this year. And, you know, I hope everyone shows up and realizes it's a great opportunity to restructure, reinvigorate the party base, and, you know, that it has the courage to be the dynamic party that I saw when I was there. And I think you know, you guys have a great opportunity to elect some great leaders.
And Diane?
Well, I would say that we're talking about the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party is all about justice, equality, and the American dream. Part of the journey of immigration, I remember in New York, I could go to any neighborhood and get a schnitzel from the German community and go over to the Italian community and get a cannoli. That's the journey, those small businesses, and we need those businesses to help generate and turn the wheels for the middle class to develop. And I think it's a wonderful thing, but I think we need to get our act together first.
Okay, thank you. And
the first
this
thing
has been the last
a chair.
I got to cut you off. I am, I like to say that what lies behind and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. And I want to say happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. And happy belated birthday to my niece, Tanya. I did send you a Facebook happy birthday, Tanya. I did not hear from you. And Christian, I hope to see you soon. Diane, I hope to see you soon.
Okay.
And just remember, everybody that can make it to the SEC special meeting tomorrow, get your butts up and get there. This is an important election. We need to have this election finished with by this month. This convention is coming up, and it's too important. This is the last word.